might the party end with high energy prices? Some are making that bet and some are taking that bet. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The price of crude oil is down 0.6% in New York to $73.70 a barrel. This after the U.S. hinted it might be a little less strict in rolling out the Iran oil sanctions. Plus, Saudi Arabia says it's already made up the difference for Iranian oil being taken off the market. But is the world getting too relaxed about the price of oil? The Wall Street Journal today listed data showing that the number of financial bets on oil going above $100 a barrel sometime this year have doubled in the last month. On Mondays, we consult Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives.
It is something that, for example, the Dallas Fed president has been warned about last week, that there could be upside risk to oil prices. The reason is we've got lots of disruptions politically with Venezuela, with Iran, with various supply points.
It would be the opposite of a couple years ago when, you know, some analysts really call it the hidden recession. This is when oil and gas fell into the tank and people directly connected with energy really had an economic shock.
We had an investment recession. We had a profit recession in those years. So now that we have a major energy sector, which is a driving force in our economy now, when energy prices go down, it's harmful to those regions in that sector. And when energy prices go up, it's good for them. So it's sort of an automatic stabilizer within our economy with regard to oil prices.
Now, on the price of oil, I mean, I guess we need a reminder that it's not just a law of economics that determines the price. Producers can choose to produce more if there's an upward spike, and perhaps they could adapt if things move too high too fast.
With the U.S. energy industry, they're much more flexible and market-driven than, say, OPEC has been traditionally. So if energy prices do rise, over time we will see a supply response, some investment, and eventually that will bring prices back down.
Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We've also drilled down into the work of the two folks who won today's Nobel Prize in Economics. Both develop systems for accounting for the future. Yale's William Nordhaus on how to get markets to encourage environmental sustainability, and NYU's Paul Romer on how technology plays out in economic growth. The discussions in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed now. America's trade deficit is growing when you count goods and services, as is typical, but services alone tell a different story, as Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports.
When it comes to services, the U.S. is actually running a trade surplus. In August, a $23 billion surplus. Constance Hunter is chief economist at accounting firm KPMG.
We sell a whole bunch of high-end services to the rest of the world, and it's really the sweet spot of our economy.
Services like accounting, legal services, cloud computing. Farouk J. Contractor is a business professor at Rutgers.
More than a third, it's 34% of U.S. exports in total, are not in goods but in services.
So why does the trade deficit, which is mostly goods, get all the attention? Barbara Matthews is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council.
You can measure how many physical tennis balls were shipped in or out of the country. It is a lot harder to measure what kinds of design services have been shipped outside of the country.
But once you wrap your mind around it, the numbers look pretty good. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Hi, I'm Zach, and I listen to Marketplace in Arlington, Virginia. I think what I appreciate the most about Marketplace is their ability to take the economic news of the day, issues such as tariffs, rate hikes, and tax reform, cut through the political noise, and clearly and concisely explain not only how these issues affect our country and the rest of the world, but how they impact people like me. I hope you'll consider joining me as a Marketplace investor and donate today at marketplace.org to help make their work possible.
In two different hemispheres of the world, officials are cutting back how much of a financial cushion banks have to keep on hand for emergencies. But the U.S. and China are doing this for different reasons, which provides a teachable moment here on economic stimulus and financial market risk. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now live from Washington. Nancy, let's start with China. How are things changing for Chinese banks and their customers?
Yesterday, China's central bank announced that it's pumping almost $175 billion into the economy. This is part of an effort to get Chinese banks to lend more. The People's Bank of China also says it's cutting reserve requirements for banks by a percentage point. Reserves are basically how much banks have to set aside in cash and other liquid assets as a cushion. And the thinking is if Chinese banks don't have to keep as much capital on hand, they'll lend more.
And why is China doing this?
It may be related to the trade war with the U.S. The Trump administration's latest sanctions went into effect last month, 10% tariffs on $200 billion more in Chinese products. The tariffs are cutting into Chinese exports, so the government is trying to give the economy a shot in the arm by getting banks to make more loans.
Now, in the U.S., the Senate Banking Committee held hearings last week about something seems similar, changing reserve requirements here, right?
That's right. The Dodd-Frank financial reform law made banks set aside more capital so they'd have a bigger financial cushion. But there's a new law exempting some mid-sized banks from the toughest provisions of Dodd-Frank. And these are banks with less than $250 billion in assets.
Well, we don't need any stimulus, it seems, or not much. But what's the reasoning here?
Unlike China, U.S. regulators are not easing regulations to just stimulate lending, although that could happen. The thinking in the U.S. is smaller and mid-sized banks are overregulated and won't pose any threat to the financial system if regulators do ease up a bit.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thank you for that briefing. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.